him in a way that was just a slap in the face, really. It was a calling him rabbi and kissing him was just so offensive. But I think now I want to talk for a couple minutes about this idea about why was he picked to be one of the inner circle disciples of Jesus? Why did Jesus pick him to do that? And I will say again, we do not have any direct answer to this. There's not an explanation of that Jesus picked him knowing exactly what would happen, or that Jesus picked him because he would betray him, or picked him and was, I wouldn't say surprised, but found out about who that person would be later. So I want to just ask that out there. What are the possible reasons that Jesus would pick Judas and it would end like this? Before I ask that question, I want you to think about that for a minute. Let me ask this question, which I think is important first. What was he picking? When Jesus was selecting, making these selections, of which Judas was one, what was he selecting? This one should be easy. Apostles, and what is an apostle? We can be a follower of Christ, we can be a messenger of Christ, but to be an eyewitness of Christ, to witness what he experienced, and to be able to report that, and to take part in the launching of his ministry is a unique thing that these apostles had, and of course the powers that they were bestowed with. Tammy? So if you didn't hear what she said that Jesus picked a cross-section, that he picked, you know, when he picked fishermen and Matthew, and he picked, just different types of people, and Judas, she said he picked a cross-section in order to represent, you know, have an effective ministry. I don't take issue with that. I want to make a tangent point to that. He might have been attempting to pick a cross-section. Part of me thinks he just thinks very different than we think when selecting people to embark on a ministry. That when he picked fishermen, we might think, well, yeah, he picked some blue-collar guys, you know, that. So he was really trying to make a point about that. Another option is those are the kind of people he valued, and that those types of that personality type he valued. Or the fact that he chose Matthew may have been because he valued some specific character trait of Matthew. Or I think part of the reason we are confused about the nature of the people he picked is because we don't think like Jesus sometimes. And we think, well, we want to pick the best preachers, the people who can speak the best, the people that have the most credibility. And we pick our dream team. You know, when we went and played, you remember the dream team? What was that? What was that, 88 or anybody? 92. We picked the dream team to go to the Olympics. And so what we did is we picked the biggest, best basketball players, and because we wanted to win. I think Jesus was doing that too. I kind of feel like he was picking his dream team. And he said, these are the people that have the highest likelihood of making my ministry successful. So anyway, I'm not disagreeing with you, but I think that's two sides of that maybe. The cross-section was important. So he was picking men to be eyewitnesses, to be trusted with that message, to spread that message, to help launch his ministry. Why then pick Judas? I think we have to start with one reason, is that it's possible that he had skills that would be helpful in his ministry. Possibly even him being able to handle the money was useful, and he became corrupt. But I will say I don't see any indication that the selection of his apostles was anything different than picking ministers of his gospel to be spread along the world, and that Judas was selected as one of those. But what other things or what other reasons might there be? Yes, ma'am. And I'm going to repeat that because you don't have a super loud voice, but it was an excellent point that because I want to talk about that side of it. Another side of this is, and she said, Jesus is God. Jesus is all-knowing. Because of that knowledge, when he selected Judas, we cannot expect that he didn't know exactly what Judas was going to do and how he was going to do it. And that it was part of his mission. Is that a good enough repeating of what you said? I don't want to misrepresent it, but I think we have to. I think we have to bring that up. That Jesus knew exactly what was going to happen, and what evidence do we have of that? Yes. He knew who would betray him from the beginning. That he said from the beginning that he knew who would be, and he was kind of saving that information, and then eventually he brought that out. What other evidence do we have about that? Well, he brings it up when they're together. He talks about it. He points out who the person is. He tells Judas himself who that is. So the question is, does that necessarily mean that when he picked him for that purpose? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But we can't diminish Jesus' ability. We can't diminish who he was. And so I think it's important that we bring that possibility. I want to talk more about that in just a minute. Other thoughts about the reasoning behind Judas being in this inner circle, these apostles of Jesus Christ? We talked about, I want to bring this up because we brought it up last time. It is said on at least two occasions, I guess three really, that it was fulfillment of prophecy. That there were prophecies in Psalms and in Zechariah and in other places that talk about how this is going to play out. Now, it does not name Judas Iscariot. It does not name him specifically, but it does talk about the betrayal and the amount of money and how it would go down and that it would be a person that he shared. In fact, in John 13, he says that the person that I share bread with will betray me. And he said, I'm telling you this now, so that when it does happen, you'll believe that I am he. So there seems to be some indication that he was using that knowledge in order to help encourage them. So the prophecy has to play into this as well. But I want to make sure we understand. I think the possibility exists that there was good, a role for Judas to play that was good. That he did not only perform this dastardly act of betrayal, that he was selected in some time past where he took part as an apostle before this betrayal. Yes. Yes.
And which hints at, to me at least, that wasn't necessarily then from the outset, again, pinning to the free will we talked about as well, that he didn't necessarily come into this story as that being his destiny, if you will.
I think it's, and I think that's a good passage to point out, that it said he would become a traitor. He would become a betrayer. And even when John mentions that Jesus knew that, the question is, did he know that when he picked him? And so, once again, I want to bring these things up just for thought because I don't have some great insight into exactly Jesus' mindset. The best thing I can say is, Jesus took this and made it good. That he was, however this betrayal worked out, God had a plan and Jesus had a plan to make it good and to make it work for what God had planned. Yes, Jim. Yeah, and so we know that before he selected his disciples, this wasn't just him wandering around and saying, hey, you seem pretty good, and I think you might help, and these fishermen guys over here. He spent all night in prayer preparing to do this. An argument can be made that the role of Judas was enlightened to that at some point, or that the people that he was to pick were he was enlightened into that. So I don't want to flounder on this too much. Just to say, I think we have to think through exactly, you know, why this was done, because it plays into me to Jesus' plan for his ministry. Another thing that I think plays into this a little bit is what happened after Judas died. He died in such a terrible way. What happened after that? There was an empty spot, and it needed to be filled. And they drew lots, and they had added Matthias to it. Why did they need to fill that spot? I think there were at least two reasons. What was one reason we're told that they needed to fill his spot? The prophecy said they would. It said that the spot would be filled. And so the prophecy said that. And another reason I think we have to consider is that it was needed. That this person, they were shorthanded. And that this person was needed in order to continue the ministry. I won't spend a ton of time at this, but I do just want to bring up the idea that Jesus, and I'm going to establish some of the easiest prerequisites here. These are all disclaimers that are, I think, the easiest ones I can make. Jesus is the Son of God, without question. He was deity. Jesus knew the hearts of men. It says specifically that he knew the hearts of men. He knew what was to come. He knew what his future was, and he knew what was to come for him. And he was a prophet, most certainly. One verse that I think is interesting in Matthew 24, let's read Matthew 24, just because I think it is an interesting thing he says here. Matthew 24 and verse 36, and this is about, you know, Matthew 24 is all about the end of times. And he says in verse 36, but about that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father alone. For the coming of the Son of Man will be just like the days of Noah, for as in those days before the flood, they were all eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark. We'll stop there. But isn't it interesting that he says here about the end of times that the day and the hour no one knows, not even the Son of Man knows. And I don't know why that particular thing. I can't tell you why that particular thing is not known, but it brings up a point that Jesus, as he was a man, clearly had knowledge. He clearly was given, revelations were made to him, and he knew things, and he was able to prophesy. The question has to be asked, did he have all knowledge of every event that would happen in the future? Now, the point that was made earlier, he was God. He was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. I can't answer the question. I can say this. The question is, did he know every single event, and did he have access to that everything that would happen in the future, and he was predicting those events? Or was it like prophecies throughout time where something was revealed, and that knowledge was revealed, and that was used either to make a prophecy so that people would know what was coming? Like for example, with Peter, what did he prophesy about with Peter? That came to pass very quickly. Was that? Yeah, they would deny him three times, and that's exactly what happened. Even with Judas, who would betray him, and he knew about that. So I'm not telling you this because I have the answer. I'm here to say those are things to be considered. That prophecy is not necessarily prediction. It's not a parlor trick. Prophecy is not about being able to play a game and just tell events that are coming up. It has a purpose. And it certainly had a purpose in the case of Judas. And so I won't go too deep into that, just to say that even though we don't know, Judas was selected, and whether it was because he knew exactly what he would do, or Judas betrayed him and Jesus made good of that, the outcome was the same. Jesus knew, you look at what happened in the garden, and where he was there and he was praying and sweating and you know, he says, let this temptation pass. He asked God that God's will be done, but he says, let this cup pass. Jesus clearly had this human characteristic and was working really hard at it. And the fact that he was human meant that he experienced temptation and defended against temptation. And so I try not to think about Jesus when he's here as just God floating around with all power, executing that power in every situation. He went around as a man, and he had this connection with his Father, and he had revelation from his Father, but he was still a man fighting the battles of a man, but successfully. Ray, were you going to say something?
Now, when you start thinking about eternity or the past, God always was and always will. I mean, you start to get out of our comprehension ability. And so Jesus might have known some of this. He might have chosen to know. You know, maybe he said, okay, I'd like to know that. Or whatever. I just don't know how it works. But at any rate, just like Pharaoh, his heart was hardened. It wasn't actually Pharaoh that had to do it because he had no choice. He had his heart was hardened, and therefore he did the thing. And he had still a free will to do that or not to do that. And I think Judas could have not done that. But
well, and Jesus had free will as well. Jesus could have chosen to sin. He chose not to. It says he experienced temptation, but without sin. And so he had free will as well. Judas had free will to make this choice. This was, even though it was prophesied, that doesn't mean that Judas was forced. He made this choice, and we see that he wanted the money, and he regretted the decision, and how bad his end was. So I think the best point we want to bring up here is we don't want to. Speculation will not help with this. This is something that we really, our minds almost can't conceive of. It's something that's hard for us to understand. Go ahead, were you going to say something else, Ray?
I was going to say, the reasons why Jews might have done this is similar to why Abraham might have tried to kill his sons, the knife and raise the knife. He thought in his own mind that God could raise him back up. If Jesus was given over to the Romans, that's okay, because you know everything's going to turn out all right. No matter what I do, even if I betray and get the money, it'll all work out on the other end.
That is a common, I think, and fair assessment of it. I don't go that direction because of him being called a traitor and a betrayer and the devil. Even with Jesus referring to him, it does not seem like he had any part as a hero in this story, or that he had excuse. And so, but I think all of it is important to understand. Well, I want to say one more thing before we talk a little bit about James. In Deuteronomy 18, there are passages that talk about how do we know a person of God? How do we know a prophet? I took classes we did the classes on the Judges and the Kings, and I went to those and it was so interesting, the stories, but the stories of prophecy in the Old Testament always, to me, I have trouble grasping, because when a person comes up and preaches something without the Bible, we have a standard to go back to. We have the Bible. If someone comes and preaches something and we don't have the standard, how could you possibly know if they're true or not? How could you know if a prophet is telling the truth or not if you don't have a standard to go back to? Deuteronomy 18, I think, has a pretty straightforward way of describing that. In verse 21, if you say in your heart, how will we recognize the word which the Lord has not spoken? When the prophet speaks in the name of the Lord and the thing does not happen or come true, that is the thing which the Lord has not spoken. The prophet has spoken it presumptuously. You are not to be afraid of him. And so this is this really simple statement that says, how are we supposed to identify when a prophet comes and says something that didn't come from God? It's this specious reasoning of, how do I identify something that someone didn't say? And so he says, if a prophet comes to you and says something, and then it doesn't come to pass, well, what do you know about that? It did not come from God. And so I think that's the same way that we look at Jesus. And I don't mean to be condescending at all about that. We look at Jesus and he prophesied about things. Not only did he refer to old prophecy and fulfill it, but he prophesied and the things came true. The things came to pass. And so what that tells us is that he is a true prophet of God, and that when he says that God is his Father, and when he says that God has revealed things to him, we know it's true. We will never know the detail of information or exactly what he knows or how the future works in the mind of God. We'll never know that. But we do know how to identify a prophet and how to know whether they're truly from God. And Jesus checks all those boxes even as he dealt with Judas. All right, let's move on for today. It seems like the study of Judas Iscariot is a very interesting one. I get the impression that it's real interesting conversation. But more than anything, what we have to understand is that Jesus had an inner circle, and one of those people betrayed him, and that betrayal led to his assassination. But God's purpose was not ruined. This did not break God's plan. This played right into God's plan for the salvation of the world. And even though the story of the betrayer is ugly and sad and surprising in some ways, it was able to be used by God to fulfill his purpose exactly. And so I think we will want to remember that about Judas Iscariot, that he was a traitor, that he betrayed Jesus, and that God made that good. God made that work into his plan just like it needed to. Okay, any other thoughts about that before we move on into James? Yes, please. Oh, go ahead.
They were a team, they were working together, and when he betrayed Jesus, he betrayed them as well.
Yeah, and in fact, whenever Jesus said, one of you will betray me, their reaction, they had this extremely emotional reaction to that, not only just to say it's not I, but to say, how could this be? How could it be? But you're right, he betrayed not just Jesus, but all of those, that inner circle. Judy? Yeah, there's things that there, and I like to point that out, that Jesus didn't pick his disciples, and then a few days later he was betrayed. There was a lot going on, and the thing that to me, and this isn't the point you made because yours was good by itself, but it's almost a combination of the two points y'all just made. For him to go around with them and be in his inner circle and see what kind of a person Jesus was, to see the heart of Jesus and the love. And to see it talks about how confidently he speaks and still betray him in that way, it's an even bigger slap in the face. It wasn't just, I think this guy's a good guy. He got to see it himself. The love, the power, the compassion, what kind of a person Jesus was, and still to betray him for such a small price. So thank you for bringing that up. I think it's important for us to see that in the life of Judas. All right, well, let's take just a few minutes, and I want to talk about James, and we'll probably move pretty quickly into John. And as you, I'm sure, know, John will have plenty to talk about with the Apostle John. But we know that James and John were brothers. They were the sons of Zebedee. We see that when Jesus comes and selects them. He sees them fishing with their father, Zebedee, and he calls them. And just like the others who were fishermen that were called, they dropped their nets and they went with him. He asked them to come and they saw this and they were willing to go. But the story I want to look at tonight when we look at James, and because there's really just a few moments in James's life that we have some knowledge of. When Jesus came and selected him from being a fisherman with his father and walked away, which by the way tells us he probably was young as well, that he was probably a young person still fishing with their father. and maybe even as young as Clay Soto, which we know is the youngest person. Is he here? Oh, he's back there. Okay. I'm using him. I'm trying to make him feel good about being young. But he was might have been in his teens, might have been in his 20s. And he and his brother were selected. And there are really, there's a story now that I want to look at here. And go ahead and turn to Mark 10, where we see a story of James and John. And then we know, we'll see a short verse about how his life ended. But let's look at Mark 10 tonight as we learn a little bit about. And once again, we don't have a lot that we learn about from what James himself said. We know that there were times when John said something and he said, we, and we suspect that it was him and James that were there. But there's not a lot where we get to see James talking. But this story in Mark 10 is interesting. In verse 35, James and John, the two sons of Zebedee, came up to Jesus saying to him, Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you. I want to stop there right now. That's a great way to start a conversation with Jesus. Now, I will be honest. I have done this with people numerous times, and you probably have too, where I say, Dariel, I'm going to ask you something. Just say yes. Before you even hear what it is, I need you to agree to it. And that usually fails. But in this case, they say, Lord, we want you to do whatever we ask of you. And what's the obvious question that Jesus would ask back? And he said to them, what do you want me to do for you? They said to him, grant that we may sit one at your right and one at your left in your glory. Now, in Matthew 20, what do we know about, what's a slightly different angle we have on this in Matthew 20? Who came to Jesus? Their mother. And that's a good method, I want to say. To have their mother go in. It says in Matthew 20, then the mother of the sons of Zebedee came to Jesus with her sons, bowing down and making a request of him. He said, what do you desire? So we see now Jesus is being asked, what do you want? And it says, grant that we may sit one on your right and one on your left in your glory. What were they asking? What is it that they were asking to do here? So a position of authority. They were asking to be put in this almost deity level of authority. What else were they asking for? In what environment were they asking to be seated? Yes. I go one step further. I think there was not one chance they understood what they were asking, that they were asking to be on his right and left hand in the heavenly kingdom that would be a spiritual kingdom that he would... I think there's almost no chance that that's what they thought. They very likely were asking to be sitting at his right hand and left hand as the leaders of this new political kingdom. When the Romans were overthrown by the Jews, which they really hoped would happen, which the exact opposite of that happened in AD 70, but they wanted to be there in the position of political and military power next to Jesus when his kingdom was successful on earth. And so I would say it's probably very similar to whenever a person is running for president and that person is, maybe they've gotten the nomination. And what goes on behind the scenes? Anybody here know a lot about, I'm going to ask Wes in a minute because I know he teaches, has taught civics in the past. But what goes on behind the scenes when a guy has obtained the nomination? What's that? Strategizing. Yeah. Cabinet positions. It is now all of a sudden a negotiation to say, I got a chance at being president here. I'm going to be... Ho Jung is going to be Secretary of State, and I'm picking these people. Mrs. Finley is going to be Attorney General, and I know she wants that job. But you see, there's this idea that I am now going to be in a position of power, everybody's going to be jockeying now for their role. And so that's exactly what happens when a person gets a nomination. Now it's a matter of getting people on their side and people then coming to them and trying to obtain roles of power. Probably similar to what they were doing here. Jesus, we believe you're going to successfully build your kingdom. We think you are capable of beating the Romans. Can we have these positions of power and authority whenever that time comes? So, Jesus, his response to them is another knowing one where we see that he says in verse 38, "You do not know what you're asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink or to be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized?" That's the most time the word baptized is used in a verse if you're looking for that. But he says, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't even know what you're asking for. And he asks, are you willing to be baptized with this baptism? What is he saying to them? He first of all says, you don't know what you're talking about, but what is he asking them? Are you willing to die for this? Are you willing to go through what I'm about to have to go through? Are you willing to do that? Now, what's the interesting angle on this we're about to find out? In verse 39, he said to them, they said, we're able. Once again, probably still not understanding. And Jesus said, the cup that I drink, and you shall be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized. But to sit at my right or my left is not mine to give, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared. So they said, we are able. And what did Jesus say back? He said, you will. You will drink of this cup. Why did he say that to them? How does James's life end? Yeah, James was martyred, and John also died. And so it is interesting that Jesus here, when they say that, he almost says, you know, you will encounter this. You will drink the cup. And we'll look at that next time, in fact. We'll look at where we learn that they really did die for Christ. But he says, you just don't understand what you're asking. And he says, though, but to sit on my right or my left is not mine to give, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared. And that's where we're going to start next time. Jesus said to them, he cannot give these places of right and left hand. That it's those things are prepared already. And so next time what we're going to talk about is what they were asking for, why they were asking that, and the nature of Jesus' response to them. What was their role? What did he expect of them? And the fact that their lives ended in a way where they did have to make sacrifices. But then we're going to look in verse 41 and see Jesus' lesson that he teaches them next time. We'll look at how Jesus taught them about this kingdom is different. And that's where we really want to get with what Jesus is teaching here. This kingdom is not like the one you're talking about. All those people are fighting for position. All those people are trying to fight to be the highest level or the most powerful person. That's the nature of that kingdom over there. This one is different, and he explains that to them there. All right, I appreciate your input tonight. We'll go ahead and begin there in Mark 10 next time and talk a little bit more about what James and John asked and Jesus' response, and then we'll probably start talking about the Apostle John next time as well. Appreciate your input tonight.